Hi, I'm Natalia, and you're listening to Advanced Copy, a podcast for independent thinkers in fashion. Today, we're welcoming Sarah Kurim, one part of the mother and daughter duo behind Muse the Label. The Melbourne-based women's wear brand is such an interesting example of how ambition and a bold touch of personality can be applied to build a really strong foundation for a conscious company. Founder and Sarah's mother, Christine Kurim, is a natural self-starter, as we'll find out today, and she's also a lifelong creator of fashion. So when she attempted to sell her high-quality garments at a Melbourne market stall, the success was immediate, resonating with customers looking for unique and consciously made clothes. The stall routinely sold out of stock, and that prompted Christine to enlist the help of her daughter and today's guest, Sarah, to translate the brand's spirit to an online store and also a permanent touchpoint for Muse the Label's growing community. Sarah discusses her and her mother's independent journeys into fashion, how they translated the sellout market stalls to an online concept, and the underrepresentation of modest voices in fashion. There are so many wonderful and very personal insights that Sarah shares with us today. I think a lot of what we touch upon is going to really resonate with so many people who are maybe toying with the idea of starting a brand, but feel just overwhelmed by the responsibility of actually entering the industry. But also it will inspire those who are already on this journey to just reflect on making it a more personal experience. Enjoy. Sarah, welcome to Advanced Copy. Could you give us a top line of a kind of introduction to Muse the Label and who is behind the brand?
So we're a women's wear label out of Melbourne, and the people behind it is just me and my mum. We do everything ourselves here.
Okay, that sounds amazing, and I can't wait to find out more. So today you are actually representing yourself and your mum, Christine, who is your business partner. And I think you'll have to, channel her voice a little bit for us.
Yeah, she's a little bit shy, so hopefully I can do her justice and, you know, tell her side of the Muse story.
I'm sure you'll do an absolutely fantastic job. So I find Muse to be a very personal brand, which may of course stem from the fact that there is a mother and daughter duo behind it. Intuitively, I think we want to find out more about you both. So do you think you could paint us a picture of how you grew up and maybe your mother's life journey before starting Muse?
Well, I was very lucky that I grew up with two very creative parents. You know, mum was always sewing or drawing and painting, so she was always encouraging us to be creative. And my father owned a CD store in Melbourne, which had quite a cult following in the goth scene, funny enough, in the 90s and the 2000s. So I think we were really around like different elements of culture and arts, which was really interesting. I grew up in a single parent household, so I spend my weekends with dad, which was in the city in his CD store, around all these subcultures. And then during the week I grew up with mum in the hills with a more of a country life. So yeah, having that perspective was really interesting. And I think it just created a lot of, you know, inspiration. Like I would see very different things on my day-to-day life. I was painfully shy growing up, so I think clothing was a really great way for me to express myself. I just have the fondest memories of always dressing up and just loving fashion, and I was always drawing, and I remember mum like helping me bring those things to life. So I was really lucky that any kind of vision I had was really encouraged by both parents. I then went on to study fashion at RMIT in Melbourne, and I graduated just over 11 years ago. And I landed my first job out of university, and I did go straight into the high street kind of direction of designing for the big fast fashion labels. It really opened my eyes to the industry. I don't think I was prepared for what was going to happen. I mean, it was a toxic workplace, because I think that whole fast fashion machine, you know, comes from the top. But just realizing that the issue of an ethical, like transparent supply chain just wasn't on anyone's radar. So it was really disappointing, and I did come close to quitting the industry because it was just so cutthroat and just not a fun place for creativity. So I was looking through job vacancies, and I stumbled across this brand that I hadn't heard of, that they were all about community-based projects, ethical manufacturing, and I couldn't believe my eyes. I just didn't think these existed, and I was just so wrapped up in the fast fashion kind of bubble that I forgot that labels like this existed. I've been working there now for 4 years, and I think it's really given me a lot of optimism about the industry. And I think if I hadn't found that, I don't know if Muse would be here, because I don't think I would have had that same drive and passion seeing how other people can do things differently. I was just so stuck in that bad cycle of fast fashion. For Mum, I know she always loved sewing, but growing up in the 70s, she just didn't have the opportunities that we have now, so she didn't get to pursue a fashion kind of career, which is a shame. And then being a single mum, she kind of had to put that on the back burner. You know, she was supporting my brother and I, but she was always sewing.
And just to digress there for a second, and we'll go back to the main story in a moment, but the point you made about Christine's shyness, I think it's something, a characteristic which many of our guests do tend to have, and a trait which I really love, because I feel like this introvert nature seems to kind of disguise an enormous amount of thinking, kind of channeled into actually tackling complicated industry problems. So I just wanted to say thank you so much for speaking with us on the podcast, because representing these stories and also presenting the stories of people working in fashion who are not extrovert, who are not ego-driven, I think it really helps to diversify their idea about how one should be, the kind of personality they should have, or how they should even act in the industry. And also, for transparency, I wanted to share with our listeners that we've been trying to make this conversation happen for a couple of years. And I think we were just so lucky to have a common friend who's helped to put us in touch and encourage this interview to happen. So I couldn't do it without saying a big thank you to Jeanne, a friend who's always championing independent labels. So thank you so much, Jeanne. And I wanted to highlight this because I feel like we're just very lucky to have you as a guest on Advanced Copy, Sarah. So going back to your experience of working in fast fashion, I feel so passionate about inspiring and keeping creative individuals who have a kind of sensitivity and awareness of the world at large in our industry, because I think, unfortunately, so many get pushed out by, let's use the word toxic, toxic corporate environments. And personally, I just don't want anyone to feel like they love fashion, but they're driven to quit because of the things that happen, which is like bullying and superficial role models, you know, punishing deadlines and work schedules and so on. So when we lose sensitive or introvert people, I just feel like it's such a big disappointment on all of our behalf, just for not being able to support the growth and the vision of such individuals. But finally, sorry to digress there a couple of times, let's go back to something a lot lighter, to your earliest memories around clothes and fashion. So do you recall perhaps those transitioning, those memories transitioning into you deciding to pursue it as a career?
To be honest, I don't know if there was a point. I just always knew I did want to do it. And I think maybe that was mum's influence on me. But my earliest memories are just dressing up my brother, finding, you know, something in an op shop. It was just, fashion was just a really big part of my world. And I think because I was more of an introvert, shy person, I think that was probably one of the points that I did feel that it was something I really loved. You just not being able probably to express myself around people verbally. Yeah, I really felt that clothing was my language. I felt like it was very much a part of me and my personality.
Well, that's a really beautiful way of explaining it. And you mentioned that your mother, the founder of the brand, Christine, would have wanted to pursue a career in fashion if it was a different time.
Yeah, 100%. I think her goal in life was to have a daughter so she could start a label with them. So I think it's all worked out for her in the end. She had to go to secretary school. That was just her mother's wishes. She just had to go that path. So definitely. She got there in the end. I mean, it's taken her, what, like 40 years? But yeah, she's there now.
And the upside is that she has you as a business partner. So she's not doing it alone. And let's jump into how your journey with Muse began. When was that initial a little amber of an idea for a brand? Do you recall the first conversations that you had with Christine, and what was kind of going on in general at that really special time in your lives?
I don't think we had the intention of starting, you know, a label really. Mum had injured herself at work and just couldn't do what she was doing any longer. So she just started sewing again. And she was determined to just sew some clothes that she designed and made and put them into a local market, so have a market store. And I remember telling her, Mum, I mean, I love what you're doing and it's great, but just don't be disappointed if nothing sells. It's a hard industry. I've had friends who have had labels, they've shown at Fashion Week, and they still couldn't make it. And then I get a phone call from her after the first market stall, and she's like, I've sold out of everything. There were lines, I couldn't keep up with demand. That's when I start to kind of listen a little bit more to her. Not that I hadn't before, but I think maybe that was my jaded view of the industry. So she would work so hard. She'd be sewing 15 hours a day just to get enough product for the market, and then it would just sell out again. And that was for a good 2 years where just, yeah, she was just making and making, and I was helping her just with a little bit of design and color palettes and marketing kind of thing. But it was the majority of Mum just working so hard and really creating an amazing community. I think it was really important because, you know, a lot of labels are just online, so you don't really see the person behind it. So they were meeting her, they were meeting me, and they were looking at this store, and everything was made by her. I think that connection was really a big part of Muse, and, you know, that's kind of how it all started. Just lots of hard work and market stalls, which, you know, is not traditionally the way that I would have thought to do something. But Mum, I think also being a single parent, she just has this crazy work ethic that I've inherited too, which is a good and a bad thing. But she just worked super hard and was able to get to a point where she was able to live off the brand. But unfortunately, COVID happened. So once that happened, she couldn't do any markets. So that's probably when I came on board to really take the brand, just to get it to a point where we could be online.
So when you joined, how did you translate this very personal story of Christine and her customers, the relationships that she's already built with them? How did you translate this online without losing that community feeling of the market stalls?
We did kind of have a little website, but it wasn't anything that people could really browse and shop from. So we had a bit of a social media following at that stage too. So that also helped propel, you know, people to the website. But I think our community wanted to support and to help Muse through this lockdown time, because they knew that, you know, small brands, they needed help. We didn't have the infrastructure of bigger labels. The support that we got from our community, I think, really helped us to then have the time and the financial support to be able to look at where we were going and decide how we were going to go forward. Because that time, you know, before this, we were just working. Mum was working nonstop. So, and I was working my job, and we just didn't really have time to really nut out where we wanted the business to go. So it was almost like a time to pause and really think about the direction where we wanted to go. Yeah, I don't think we would have been able to do that without the support of, yeah, the little Muse community that had been there for the last 2 years.
And you've created a brand which really resonates with people. And, you know, I like to think that authenticity speaks for itself in just a million subtle little ways that we can't always, you know, box into marketing or business plan or strategy or anything like this. And even taking myself, for example, I've never been to one of Christine's market stalls. I've never met either of you face to face, unfortunately, not yet. But after discovering Muse through friends in Australia, just the brand's tone of voice, just the pictures, the, you know, your presence on Instagram and the website resonated straight away. And it really felt like you could tell there was something different about it.
Everything that we touch for Muse is Mum and I. We've started to outsource a little bit with some, you know, great local people, but it is majority Mum and I. And I think that does give us more of a personality, you know, through our social media or website or the garments, because it is Mum or I that are touching everything, which I think is really lovely. And I do love that part, that it is us.
Absolutely. That's the magic. You can't buy that. And the moment, the strategic moment of reflection, which you just described during the lockdowns, what kind of questions or kinks did you aim to address in the business?
It was almost like we needed to have a business plan. Like, we didn't start with that, and we didn't have any intention on where we were going. That's when I also had to make the decision. Is this going to be Christine's baby, or am I going to come on board, and are we going to do this together? That was a big moment to sit down and to agree to do it together and work out how we were going to work together, because working with family can be hard. But I think Mum and I have a very close bond. I also think that comes back to being a single parent household, where we're just super close. So we're lucky in that aspect that we do have a great working relationship. But I had to really evaluate if I could see Muse in my future. That was a big part of the discussion. I was just getting so much enjoyment out of working with her and creating these beautiful clothes and creating beautiful stories through our shoots. And I probably haven't had that much enjoyment in the industry or in work, in a career. So I knew that it was something that I really needed to spend more time on. I think probably in mid-2020 is when I would say the Muse you probably see now started.
And now that Muse has expanded into this beautiful online business and a platform, who are the key people, the kind of pillars behind it today?
Yeah, so obviously we just couldn't do it all. And I mean, we probably found out the hard way and just burnt out, both of us. So we got to a point where we did have to get people on board. And I think it was hard for Mum and I because we just had our vision. So that was hard kind of letting people in. But now we do have an incredible seamstress, Laura, who is local and has become a really close friend of Mum and I. And we've also got another seamstress called Emma who helps us when we get those wholesale orders coming through. So we've got two sewers that are subcontractors. We also decided to invest in a pattern maker. So we've got an incredible pattern maker called Joy who actually lives around the corner from Mum and who Mum has also become really close to. That side of production, you know, we're starting to get a lot more help as we grow. We've also got a new wholesale agent to help with the sales side of things. As for marketing and all that side, that's still all done in-house. And the majority of sewing is still done by Christine. But we're slowly learning to let go, which has been hard. And I think we're just in that growth phase where we can start to outsource things, but it just feels a little bit of a big step. Working out the sweet spot is we're still at that point.
And one of the hardest steps is really to scale from that very initial phase of where you have complete oversight of everything that's happening and you can trust the outcome. But exactly as you said, then you also burn out. So I think just noticing when that ball is rolling that you need to step away and to see where you have to grow in your own confidence and to ask for help to make sure that you can carry on enjoying the process as you approach these next stages of your work. So if I'm correct, Muse doesn't produce according to seasons, but as you just mentioned, you do actually sell through a few very select boutiques, which do rely on seasonal deliveries. So how does the mix of doing limited releases, made to order and wholesale work for you and Christine? Wholesale, I think, is somewhere where we can still have really a lot of innovation. And I was just curious to find out how you're approaching it, because I think Muse is one of those brands that is actually playing around in the space between direct to consumer and wholesale.
We have been trying to get to a point where we can meet a wholesale calendar, and it's really difficult. And also, like you said, we don't drop often. It's two seasons a year, and that's also intentionally wanted it to be more organic when we were ready. I find sometimes when we've got these deadlines, it really puts you out of that creative space where you can start to create something you're really proud of. I know when those tight deadlines come in that it can really interfere with that. It's not something that is easy for a label like us to meet that calendar. And I'm lucky enough to have found a great wholesale agent who understands us. And we're showing a collection of summer at the moment, and she's showing Winter Father labels. So we're a couple of months behind, or 6 months behind. But she's able to tell our story and sell based on our fashion model. And I think that in itself is something that I think stores are looking for, something different that, you know, we're not that label that you see. I drop every August, September, October, November, that we do carry through our collections for up to 6 to 8 months and we don't go on sales. There are aspects of supporting these labels in the wholesale world that does make us a lot different, you know, to other labels they're representing.
I definitely agree with you on that point. I think that stores and buyers are looking for brands that won't flood them with stock, even though there's a lot of hurdles from a kind of administrative perspective, I think. But buyers are looking for brands which are experimenting with any kind of new ways of delivering products without oversaturating the market. Because as we all know, we do have a huge problem with overstock and sustainability in general. And so it's really encouraging to hear that you found a wholesale agent that is so understanding and so supportive and flexible to kind of go with your flow and to find a way of working that suits Muse and also yourself and Christine. I think it just shows that we are seeing a rise of service providers in fashion that are motivated to apply more conscious ways of working across kind of all parts of the industry, not just from the bottom or from the top, but really like all across the peripheries, you know, whether that's image making or PR, events or sales. There's just more fresh perspectives, I think, coming up. And there are many people, like many individuals, pushing these messages of slowness, sustainability. So waiting to find the perfect partner, I think, is just paramount. Like someone who completely understands you and your values and supports your business. I think that's the most important thing. And as you've just said, as you've proven, they are definitely out there. So I would just recommend any brand owner out there that's looking for business partnerships, just not to jump on the first most exciting offer, but the one that really fits your life and moral values as well. But back to your story, the story of Muse, could you explain to us how you and Christine approach visualizing the label? When I was kind of doing some research and browsing around the website, I found it really, I don't know, thoughtful, and I really enjoyed the stories on the journal as well. And I know many brands have the journal section nowadays, but I have to say the people that you picked, I think, were really inspiring and thoughtful. They felt quite different. So I was curious to find out, to hear you actually explain the lens that you kind of apply to visualizing Muse, whether that's through photography, styling, storytelling, anything like this. How would you explain your approach?
I think we're quite lucky that we both have different perspectives on certain eras and times in fashion. You know, we both grew up through, say, the 90s and 2000s, and we had very different ideas of those times, and then we're able to bring that together. I think that's something really unique, that we can have those different ideas and have that kind of age difference that brings something, I think, quite fresh to the table. You know, we're lucky enough to work with some really incredible local, say, photographers and stylists, and, you know, they've actually become really close friends too. And I think having a connection does help bring your image or your ideas to the forefront. So we have our journal on the website, and I just really wanted to connect with our community and keep that alive from the market stalls where, you know, we really had that personal connection. Even though it's not face-to-face, through Instagram and social media, we've been able to meet some really incredible people. And I really wanted that to be a big part of Muse's story. We can't physically be in that setting anymore, but I hope that you get that feeling, you know, when you come onto our website, that we do have that community side of things. It's great because all these people have become good friends of Muse. So it's been a really a fun process too, and I think it's something I really want to keep sharing and to expand our community and, you know, to touch more people. And I think we're able to do that when we're connecting with these creatives who do have their audience. And yeah, it feels like a really organic collaboration of us and them being able to tell their story too.
And if you don't mind me asking, if it's not a trade secret, how do you actually select the guests to interview for the journal?
They've kind of come organically through a friend, or they've shopped with us and I've kind of reached out to them. So it's been a really organic process, which I think works really well. And I think they also want to collaborate with us because they can see that we're small and it's more of a personal experience. So that's also just a really easy process and a conversation, you know, like you and I are having. I don't feel like it's anything forced.
Absolutely. And I really felt like the guests just resonated on a personal level with the brand. So I'm going to be honest that I have actually read all the interviews, and I just recommend anyone listening to also go through it and have a read. They just gave me a kind of sense of calm and thoughtfulness. I also loved the recommendations for movies and for books, I think, too. And just the element of your guests actually visualizing Muse in their own way, in their own life. I thought that was really refreshing, too. And before we move on to the final part of our conversation, I made a note from one of the interviews. So it's a little bit off topic, but I really love it and I wanted to share it with our listeners because I feel like the words of this guest, at least to me, feel like they're really connected with the core of what Muse represents. So I will read it out. And I know, Sarah, you're unprepared for this. I didn't warn you, just so everybody knows. It's a snippet from your interview with the writer and photographer, Rosie Fayer. And for anyone who'd like to read the full original piece, I'll make sure to add it in the podcast notes. And on your journal, she's asked a few different questions about her work and also how she finds inspiration in different people or who she finds inspiration in. And I just really, really loved one of her answers where she says that she finds inspiration in people who don't need a big spectacle to feel like they are enough. And then she goes on to explain, people like my uncle Ian, who worked in a university boiler room for 40 years and bikes in the rain. He's traveled in India for 3 months with one change of clothes and a half and a toothbrush in a backpack, and who has never uttered a nasty thing about anyone. It was so refreshing to read this because I feel like we live in a time of speed, self-actualization, individualism, and of this general rhetoric of chasing your own dreams and never being content, never being big enough, never being, you know, important enough, rich enough, never having enough followers as well. So it was just so lovely to read this example of inspiration of Rosie's from her own family as well. And of just someone who's living their life, is a wonderful person, is adventurous, and just sounds like an absolute sunshine of a human being. So that's such a wonderful example and a message to share with others. And to me, Muse, your label, your brand, is another example of a kind of Uncle Ian that Rosie talks about.
When I read that too, I was really fascinated by her Uncle Ian. And then we went on to talk more about her Uncle Ian. So it's I find that's funny that that's also a quote that you took to.
Yeah, 100%. I guess it also really resonated with some thoughts that are built into advanced copy and what I hope to kind of share with our listeners and with owners of brands, fashion brands, or designers as well, who see the world through like a slightly different lens. And, you know, I just feel like we live right now in a time where nothing is good enough. And we're just taught that this kind of attitude is just not enough. Like, we have to strive for more. Like, the actual idea of a person being a good person is not enough anymore. And I'm sure that we all have friends who do whatever job that it is that they do and may get judged for not wanting to go further, for not striving for a promotion or to travel more or to do this or to do that, right? And now the ideas of self-development are also very popular, and they're wonderful. They're very, very important, of course, and they're helpful tools. But I do feel like there's also the self-development that comes with these ideas of you not being good enough. That's why you should always do more work on yourself, because whatever you are right now is not that thing. And you should always achieve more because you're not confident enough, or you're not advertising yourself enough, you're not networking, and so on. I guess that's why reading this interview about Rosie's uncle and his life is just really humbling and true. And I think we can all learn a lot from individuals like this and apply it to our day-to-day life.
Yeah, no, I think beautifully said.
Now, to wrap things up after that little philosophical moment, let's go back to more of this business thinking. What do you think have been the most important lessons or maybe pieces of advice that were given to you or Christine on this brand building journey? So perhaps words of wisdom, just that have stayed with you or that you continue to refer to?
I think it's just really having a good work-life balance. When you've got your own small label, it's all consuming. There's positives you can take from that too, but it does become your everything. And I think we learnt the hard way where we both just were so overworked that we just weren't enjoying any part of the process. We needed to hit that rock bottom to kind of step back and just reevaluate a lot of things and understand that, yeah, we need to have a life outside of Muse too. That's been the biggest learning experience, and I don't know if that would have happened unless we did get to that point of burnout.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Sarah. I think that will really resonate with a lot of people. There's just so much pressure that goes with wanting to create your own company, however big or small it is, and feeling also like if you don't work the extra hour or the extra weekend that it will fail and it will be your fault. It will be down to not giving enough.
Well, exactly. And then if mum's working, you know, on a Sunday night, I feel guilty. I'm not working on a Sunday night. So then we're both working. We just had to step away, and even stepping away has made us so much better in the way that we interact with each other, but also what we're doing with Muse. I feel like our next collections are going to be really, really great because we do have the space and the mindset of just being able to finally just have that time where we just were so consumed by the day to day.
And so what does that more healthy work-life balance look like for you both right now? Like, I also think, yeah, maybe it's not perfect because I understand it's easier said than done. I'm very guilty of that myself. And also when you love something and you're just so passionate about it, and perhaps in that moment of energy and creation, when you're also exhausted and you should step away, but it's just, yeah, it's very difficult. So what has that change been for you, that balance or trying to balance work and time off?
I think it's working till say 5 or 6 p.m. and having our nights off and trying to have one day a week off. We went for months with no days off. So I think it's really important to have that time away from Muse, and also for mum and I to have a relationship that's not consumed by Muse. It's been really hard to like form a mother-daughter relationship that's not about business. So that's been a really big part of the journey too, to learn how to talk to each other, not about work. So just those little things and doing things together that doesn't involve work has been really, really important and good for us.
Well, that's a really wonderful example, Sarah. Thank you so much. And I'm also just so grateful for your time today. I don't want to underplay the fact that sharing your story and Christine's story with Muse and how it began and how it's developing, it really helps to inspire people. It's so important to show kind and humble individuals working in fashion and to just build more diverse associations with the industry and who it's for. Thanks a million for being here and for talking to us on Advanced Copy. Thank you for listening to this episode of Advanced Copy. We believe in sharing practical information to help create a healthy world of independent fashion. Subscribe and follow us on Instagram to find more pragmatic stories of how to get there. See you next time.